Part of our innovation series, I'm here with Danny Flynn, the Director of School Relations for ICLE. He's here to talk to us about classical Catholic education and his role in growing the movement throughout the country. Welcome, Danny.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it.
I'm hoping you can tell us a little bit about how we define classical education. How does ICLE define a classical Catholic education, and what are the essential components that distinguish it from other educational models?
Sure. One simple point of distinction in that one sense, we deliberately try to use the term Catholic liberal education as opposed to classical, not that they're in opposition to each other, more so in the sense of the term classical is ordinarily used to refer to the origins of where this actually comes from, right, from the Greeks. We prefer to use the Catholic intellectual tradition or Catholic liberal education to help you see the ends of what we're aiming for. Notably, we're trying to fit children for heaven. So one small piece there, just so people know how we refer to things. Secondly, I would say in general, the preference is to try and help unlock and to also restore at the same time the church's rich tradition for understanding the tenets of the faith, namely the Logos, right? So aiming to aspire students to desire the good and the truth for the sake of the good and the truth. So how do we do this? Namely, through equipping teachers to be able to help understand the tenets of the faith and the truth and where it comes from, church teaching, so that they can then go out and help inspire faith, wisdom, and virtue in their students. So this sounds like, in one sense, maybe lofty aspirations, maybe less tactical or less, you know, something you can hold in your hand. But when you really reorient the goods of your school and you kind of set your target on bringing people to the foot of the cross, it tends to make more sense in terms of realigning the notion of the culture of the school and what the direct aim is.
Thank you. That sounds very much like what we talk about here in the Diocese of Cleveland, that we are in our education preparing students not only for life, but also for life everlasting. And that's really the reason that we have Catholic schools. You can get that education in English and mathematics anywhere.
Correct.
But we've got to form people to be disciples. So, Danny, can you tell us what is ICLE? How do you define the organization? What does it do? What's its purpose? And give us the brief description.
Sure. So we are a institute as an organization that's really aimed at the heart of serving teachers in Catholic education throughout the country. We do serve some schools outside of the states, but our really primary focus is really working towards the renewal of the sacred tradition offered to teachers in buildings. So we offer this in some cases for individual teachers through our credential program or through individual membership. We also do this for entire faculties through faculty formation of schools going through a 3-year renewal process. We can also do this at the diocesan level and offering formative experiences for diocesan leaders and school leaders. So we're not an accrediting body. We don't sell a product. We don't sell materials off the shelf. What we offer is a enriching experience for educators to be drawn into the church's tradition, to understand the church's mandate on education so that they can give their students something better to love.
How does the classical Catholic model reinforce and deepen Catholic identity of a school? How does it help evangelize both students and their families?
Sure. So I would speak to the word culture as the primary emphasis. In one sense, we need to get away from traditional understandings, or I really should say misunderstandings of the church's really origins of espousing to even get into evangelization through education. Meaning, I think in America in particular, we've misconstrued the church's mandate for this by saying we're going to be what Mike Naughton described earlier in this fall as a dewy cake with Catholic icing, right? We need to instead see our Catholic understanding of truth, goodness, and beauty as the leaven, as the yeast that actually raises everything else to the top. So we're looking for a full integration of things into all subject matters. And I'm not talking about math lessons having to derive from the notion of Jesus is in the boat with four apostles and they catch seven fish on the right and nine on the left. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the infusion of truth into every single subject matter and aspiring to provoke awe and wonder in the hearts of the students so that they're drawn in to actually understand and know and grasp the truth because they want it, because it's good, and because they want it to reign in their hearts. So it speaks to all notions of pedagogy, of the mission and the vision of the school. It speaks to parent programs that you provide. It should make schools think twice about extracurricular activities, even about like what sort of play offerings or musical offerings you might provide, right? If you're going to go about doing something, should all speak back to the nature of the mission and vision of what the schools espouse to, like what direction are we heading? Where are we? What are we trying to achieve? What is our goal? And if it's drawing into the heart of Christ, then it should touch all of these things across the board. So it provides an ample opportunity, and we've seen in many of the schools that we serve across the country that many children are actually falling in love with this mode of education. And in tandem, parents are starting to reevaluate the notion of how their family life and their family culture is acclimating to that or not. Not in a crisis moment, but more so our children are being offered something better to love. Maybe we want that too for the whole family.
Thank you. Yes, that speaks to really a deep examination of the culture of the school, the deeply held beliefs, the root beliefs that the school is founded on, what it makes its decisions around. That's no small undertaking. And so I want to ask a bit about the transition. You know, considering our audience here are people who may want to explore a classical Catholic education, how long does it take a school to adopt this approach? And you know, when it comes to school culture, to curriculum, is there sort of a process of adoption that's common? And are there phases that a school could look forward to?
Sure. Yes. There's certainly a standard mode. I like to use the analogy of an aircraft carrier trying to make a U-turn. This doesn't happen overnight, right? There's a lot of people and a lot of intricate role players in terms of making a turn. And I would argue for any direction that a school is trying to make a significant shift for, not solely just the liberal arts. So it shouldn't be taken lightly. Ordinarily, most of the schools that we enter into a relationship with will take upon a 2 or 3 year, mostly a 3 year renewal. And there's some cases where schools might take a little bit longer than that. Having gone through the process myself as a middle school teacher, I was teaching eighth grade humanities, integrated humanities at a school that adopted this. We didn't really feel comfortable to the degree that we actually knew what we had set out to achieve until 2 years into the process. And then it was really another year or two after that where we felt like we could actually speak to what we were doing within our classrooms. This came by way of lots of professional development, lots of seminar as a faculty, lots of observation of watching each other, visiting some other schools that had already been doing it, lots of dialogue, lots of informal observations from our administration as well. So I would say the standard window is probably 3 years. That ends up being pretty much the bread and butter offering that the majority of the schools that we undertake a formal contract and offer professional development in their schools go through what we would call as a 3 year renewal. And this includes a wave of both in-person workshops, recorded webinars, guided discussions where we provide questions and we provide text to seminar on, some coaching for school leaders on a monthly basis, and then a chance for teachers to actually meet online in the evenings once a month with the same developmental stage age group so they can get best practices and get some questions answered while they're going through the process and not kind of just, you know, aimlessly trying a whole lot of things in your classroom during the day with their students and not knowing if it's landing in the right direction. Meaning your students will tell you if it's landing in one sense, but you also want to be able to kind of tether all of these things that you're trying in your classroom to ensure that you're actually aiming for the correct goal.
Thank you. Yes, you mentioned professional development, which I have to assume is really important to any sort of renewal. Can you tell us about a little more about that professional development? What sort of formation, what's that formation like that teachers need to effectively teach in this model? You named the coaching, the collaboration and the groups and evenings. Give us a little more of a window into that.
Sure. So if a school is actually adopting this process of restoring the Catholic intellectual tradition in their school, more than likely they're going to take the three-year route. And in the midst of the three-year route, they would have four in-person workshops, each lasting 2 days long over the three-year period. We go through the following topics in these four workshops: an introduction, an inquiry, mimetic, and quadrivium. So the emphasis here is a layered approach of both theology, philosophy, anthropology, and pedagogy. So you're going to see a balance of all of these things in all of the workshops. So it's not to say that we just want to start with theory, solely based theory, and kind of, you know, make sure everyone's caught up to speed in that. We're going to layer in notions of why there's a deliberate emphasis and focus on these particular tenets as opposed to others. So we use a little booklet written by Archbishop Michael Miller called The Holy See's Teaching on Catholic Education, where he goes through five marks. And this serves as the bedrock for the majority of the instruction. That's the driving force as we take a faculty through, right? Because he's drawing on significant church tradition, using all of the church's documents and pulling these things out, right? The notion of this is not a method. It's also not a product that you can just purchase off the shelf. What's really going on is the cultivation of the heart of the individual teachers. And so this needs to take place over time. And it needs to have a balanced understanding of what the aim and the emphasis and the target and the goal is, while also saying, how do I relate this to first graders? How do I relate this to seventh graders or 11th graders, right? So you need to have some variation of having live instruction while also letting it sit with you and pray with this in your heart and understanding where the church is really trying to draw us into this rich tradition. And then saying, I'm going to practice some of these options in my classroom and see how I draw them out. So there's as you go through the process, you know, as a faculty, you're probably going to have some self-evaluative moments where you say, what do we assert in adopting this model? What do we forego? Maybe there's some things that we need to shave off. Maybe there's some things that we need to adopt. Each school, there's going to be a wide spectrum of what that looks like, meaning some folks are developing in one direction already. Some might have a longer road to go. I'll speak for my own experience. When we switched things over in the school that was in, many of the middle school students struggled with this new notion of assessment and also of writing. They had been kind of schooled in one sense on doing things in a very tactile way, which was, you know, approaching a chapter, looking at the end of chapter questions, memorizing the boldface words, and just kind of queuing up the next quest or quiz or test based on everything that was taken directly from the book. We were moving away from that, and the students that had kind of grown up through that model were struggling significantly. So we had to kind of shepherd them through that process and help them see that we're moving away from these types of assessments, but we're actually drawing you into a deeper discussion. You'll be able to add more depth and breadth to your knowledge by assessing you in different forms and actually closing the book quite a bit and actually having richer, deeper discussions that cover the same amount of content, but it's not solely reliant on the text being the only guide for the material to be covered.
Thank you. That's helpful. I love how you started with Archbishop Miller's text, and that's actually, those five marks have been influential here in Ohio, where all of our Catholic schools are accredited through the Ohio Catholic School Accreditation Association. That's actually a foundational text we use for those Catholic identity goals. So it's already familiar to us. But you start with that sort of the big picture and narrow down to the classroom work of assessment and the change that you've seen in assessments. Can you tell us about sort of in between are the curricular frameworks, the planning, the other work of professional work of teaching and learning? Are there resources or frameworks, or what kind of supports from ICLE help schools develop this sort of curriculum for elementary grades?
That's a massive component. I would say a third to almost half of what the workshops that we provide in terms of plan, prep, approaching the content that you've always taught in a slightly different lens. So we go through the process of inquiry, of trying to draw students in to understand what the truth actually is through a formative process in which you're provoking awe and wonder. You're trying to inspire students to ponder about things and really richly, deeply understand them, right? So instead of going an inch deep and a mile wide, we're trying to go a mile wide and multiple inches on either side, so that they can really grasp and understand something. And even in something like math, which is often looked as kind of like the skill, drill, and kill method, you need to have mastery and understanding of something like your multiplication facts. But you also need to understand, like, what's actually happening? Can I really explain what was really unfolding here, as opposed to just looking at a symbol and trying to execute what's in front of me? You're going to need to do both over time, but really trying to draw into the notion of understanding what that actually is. Same is true of literature. We put a heavy emphasis on things like narration and being able to richly, deeply understand the tenets of what's in front of the student and being able to grasp the full reality of the story, not bits and pieces, not anecdotes, not merely just comprehension to kind of rattle off on a multiple choice assessment at the end, but really to understand the struggle, what's really at stake in the bigger picture, what virtues are the characters espoused to, and what's the truth or dilemma that's really being faced, and why this piece might compel us to really look at the world differently in response to the truth that this piece of literature actually has to offer. So like I said, a large component of the professional development is drawing teachers into that. Now, I will say most teachers fall, the default knee-jerk reaction to any new professional development is just tell me what to do, or just show me how to do it, or what's the script? What are the bullet points? I'm ready to go. I'm not against this. I just, you know, tell me. And there's a hesitancy to just be told something to do. It's much like, you know, handing a man a fish as opposed to teaching them to fish. You're going to be drawn in when the teacher actually falls in love with the entirety of this culture. So, you know, we could pass out a cheat sheet that has bullet points and says, just follow all of these steps regardless of what the content is. But that doesn't really nurture and foster the love inside the heart of the teacher. And any kid can tell you when a teacher's standing in front of them trying to teach something that they don't actually love, right? It's really hard to fake. So the notion is actually trying to help that teacher be espoused to really falling in love with the content, using the best pedagogy possible to display that and unveil the truth for their students so that they have that same experience. So the student says, my teacher has something. I desire that same experience. And they're drawn in to actually abide in Christ. They're drawn in to actually be moved. Their heart is moved, not just an intellectual piece, but both are triggered to be drawn in to understand and to love the content that's in front of them. So the last caveat I would say is this is hard for teachers. It's harder at first glance, meaning it's going to require additional prep work, additional research in a different way of how you've probably approached just covering a 45 or 50 minute lesson previously. But once you get comfortable with it, once you get the knack of it, it does get easier. But I think at first glance, there's a little bit of a hurdle to overcome.
Oh, and that's not surprising. That resonates with a lot of what we believe about teaching and learning. We often say that our vocation of teaching in the Catholic education is not just something you do. It's who you are. It's who you are called to be. Truly a vocation. And so, yeah, it does demand some self-examination and some real intellectual preparation and work. I love hearing about that. I love the examples from mathematics, from literature. How about language? Can you tell us about Latin? What role does Latin play in the curriculum as the universal language of the church? Is it required? And if so, what recommendations do you have for growing a Latin program or staffing one where there may not be one today?
Sure. I wouldn't necessarily err on the side of required. It tends to be the most commonly used in terms of a language within a school that's adopting the liberal arts. Primarily, as you mentioned, it's the language of the church. I think secondarily, it allows us to be drawn into a grammatical understanding of order and beauty, right? When we look at language, there's a natural flow and there's reasons for why words are chosen. And if we believe that words matter, then we should go to the source of understanding the Latin origins of the majority of many words that are in our nomenclature, but not isolated solely to Latin. So there's an emphasis on Greek as well. I think Latin becomes accessible when you get to probably third or fourth grade on up, and then you have to kind of look at hiring a Latin instructor to kind of guide students through the process of really understanding what's going on. It's also not to say that if you had other, let's say, Romance languages in your school, you need to forego using those moving forward. I think in some cases, we've seen some schools add Latin in addition to some of the other languages, and it hasn't worked against the tide to kind of offer those to the students in tandem. Latin is a very, as I mentioned, an orderly grammatical approach to understanding the written word. And in one sense, really helps students think through what they're trying to say. When you have to slow down and you have to force yourself to say, what am I really trying to get at? Is this the most articulate sense in which I can actually prove something to be true, but also artistically define something so that people are drawn in to really know what this actually is? It tends to be the best, I don't know, the best companion to the rest of the liberal arts that are being offered here.
Thank you. I've always associated it with the model, but it's not necessarily required, but it makes good sense why it is really such an important backbone there too, everything you're describing. You've already explained that this is a journey. This is, you know, you talk about a 3-year engagement for renewal that we acknowledge this takes time. One of the things we believe in the Diocese of Cleveland is that excellence happens on purpose. So if a school is undergoing this, what are the metrics? What are the indicators? What are really the targets that we're using to evaluate the success of actually adopting the model?
Yeah, great question. And this is a beautiful topic because, again, as referred to earlier, our country has drifted a little bit from the notion of the means or the cause of education at large. And I think it's drifted it to this lane of measurable outputs that are mostly attached to academic performance, right? So assessments, college and career readiness, these type of things that really, in one sense, should be outputs of the main goals of education if you're trying to foster wonder and love in the heart of the student. They're being drawn in to understanding true things. Then it'll be borne out ultimately indirectly on assessments and readiness for other layers of schooling. So we actually conducted a survey, I believe it was in 2021, of about 70 of our member schools, and we asked them a series of questions that were different from what I just described. So we asked for them to actually quantify things like joy in the heart of your faculty, joy in the heart of your students. How engaged are families in the culture and the life of the school? Tell me about the morale of your faculty. Do they desire to be within the building? Do they desire to actually spend time with their students outside of their class? So we were deliberately asking questions that you might say could be more geared towards the culture and the subculture of your school. But in some ways, you could make the argument that this is a richer and deeper understanding of the student themselves, of them understanding themselves, and the teacher actually understanding their vocation and their role of drawing the students into this culture and this tradition. So these metrics can still be used by way of survey, and you can still poll parents. But I would argue, too, it's noticeable when you walk into some of these schools. I saw this just standing at the front door as an administrator in a school the last 8 years, and watching the joy on students' faces of literally the bell ringing and kids racing in the door, ready to learn and ready to be a part of this process, knowing that they weren't coming in to be weighed down by a massive stack of books and hours of homework that were just kind of, you know, pummel their existence as a child, but really that they were going to be drawn into a heritage and they were going to be a part of this conversation of understanding their own story about why God has made them and what they're made for. And also understanding their moment in time and space so that they know why they're there. They know why they're learning things chronologically through history to better understand man, to better understand God's quest for man and how man is in response, you know, in search of God throughout all of these stories, from the Iliad to the Odyssey to understanding more modern texts, maybe of something like To Kill a Mockingbird, and understanding, you know, ethical reasons for why things exist the way they do. So you know, I can point to some of the statistics there in terms of family engagement was through the roof, north of 70%. Teachers reported north of 80% in terms of overall faculty morale, of really being drawn into the whole process and really loving what they're actually doing, right? And it, we all know teachers don't get into this for a paycheck, right? Everyone knows what that's about. But the, you can be dragged down in the minutiae of maintenance and the interrupt-driven culture and all of the emotions that, that go into working with students. So I would just recommend pointing to some of the survey results we had. And in saying this, it also doesn't diminish the notion of it did help standardized test scores in many of the schools that were served that did adopt this. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a opposite axis connection in terms of while the culture improved, the test scores diminished. That's not the case. No. In many of the schools, as they adopted this model, their culture improved drastically, while their test scores indirectly also improved over time.
I love that it's both and. You know, those,
yes.
Those things that are probably are traditional measures or typical measures are, of course, going to go up when the things that are most important happen.
Correct.
You've really brought it back to, and I believe this is part of Archbishop Miller's book too, The Religious Dimension of Education in the Catholic School. You know, from the moment one first sets foot in the Catholic school, we know we're in a different culture. We know we're
correct.
In a place illuminated by the light of faith. If we're doing that well, then that's, surveys are helpful, test scores are helpful, but we know it when we see it. And
correct.
That's what we are aspiring to, really, for all of our Catholic schools. And speaking of those aspirations, you know, another belief we talk about here is that leadership matters. As much as we know that there's the single most important factor in the classroom for those students' development and growth is going to be the teacher's skill in formation and teaching. At the school level, especially with our Catholic school, our parish school model, at the school level, we know it's the principal. You got to have great principal leadership. You've got to have great support of pastor, principal, and the operational leaders of the school. Can you tell us about what resources and trainings available from ICLE to develop those school leaders, those principals, support them in implementation and sustaining this model of education?
Great point. I'm really glad you brought this up. Oftentimes, one of the most overlooked pieces in school professional development is at the administrative level, in the sense of oftentimes you're handed a set of keys and a laptop and a roster of students and faculty and said, kind of go get them. And much of the ensuing meeting space is filled up with policy and procedural oversight and management, which needs to happen, but not always a nurturing and a fostering of the administrator's heart to kind of see people through the lens of what am I drawing them into? Where am I leading them? Where am I taking them? Right. So a shepherding approach. So ICLE has adopted multiple forms. And I'll explain three as quickly as I can here so readers don't drift too far. But the first one is called the Diocesan Leaders Academy. This is a new program initiative that was launched in September of 2024. And this is, we currently have 15 superintendents or associate superintendents from around the country that are going through a formation program where they're receiving knowledge and formation through lecture, through discussion, reading, again, the church's mandate on education through church documents, lots of discussion and dialogue. We started the year with a retreat together as a group. They'll be going to visit some schools and a couple different dioceses in the springtime and actually getting a chance to walk through some buildings and see some schools where this is in action. Again, to help shape and mold and form the superintendents, really to be drawn into church teaching and really get a refounding of the church's mandate and charter for education. The second program that we offer is called School Leaders Academy. This is for existing school leaders throughout the country that are looking to kind of renew their own lens and how they are approaching their, in particular, their own school building and the faculty in which they serve. So again, this is instruction that's offered through Zoom. On a monthly basis, there's a formal presentation that's offered, followed by a secondary discussion, walking through scenarios, reading, completing assignments, to kind of unpack things together as a group, as a cohort. So each year we take anywhere between 25 to 50 school leaders through this program. And then the last one is called Aspiring School Leaders Program. So this is a 6-month long program for teachers, full-time teachers that are discerning the role of taking on a leadership capacity in a school building. So this is really used as a discernment process to, again, walk through the church's mandate in teaching on education, and then give teachers an opportunity to look at scenarios that actually happen, so that you know kind of what's in front of you on the other side of the desk. Should you feel called to do that, you have some preparation and some thought. You also have a portfolio of assignments that you're building as you go through, so that if you were to take a job, there's a little bit of prep work done leading up to that.
Thank you. That sounds very thorough in terms of talking about the superintendent level, the school leader level, the teacher level, the aspiring leader level. Let's talk a little bit about the parent and community level. What sort of tactics are best in terms of a school effectively communicating the value of a classical education to the parents, the parishioners, the other stakeholders, especially in a place where the model may not be so prevalent? What advice or what supports does ICLE have?
Sure. Yeah, I think every Catholic school is charged with drawing the family in and never creating a artificial boundary where parents feel as though I'm just going to, you know, drop my kid off in one spot and pick him up in another spot and the school's going to do all of the work. No, that would be cutting off the notion of what the church has always held, which is the parents being the primary educator. So what you really want to do is draw them into the entirety of the process and really help the conversation kind of mesh and mold together, in which you're sharing the responsibility of really guiding and molding the student into these tenets of the faith that we've been talking about. So this comes by way of how you look at assessment. This comes by way of how you actually communicate with parents, right? Like if you're solely just using a portal and you provide a little to no human interaction with the family, you're telling them something about their role in the process, right? You're communicating indirectly through your communication method and how that should look and feel. How you set up your schedule, you know, what's in the best interest of the child. Certainly students with any academic or even intellectual disabilities, you know, how do you communicate? How do you speak to those parents? How do you draw them into the education that you're trying to aim for and or modify for their students? I think also to the offerings that are provided on non-curricular hours. So, you know, if a school is actually looking to organize anything after 3 o'clock for families to partake in, you really have to consider the role of the family, of what's really going to serve them well, what's going to feed them. I'm not talking about pizza. I'm talking about the culture of their family, of like, if we're arranging a math night, great, let's do it at the most convenient time that works for families. Maybe we do need to feed them physically before the math night begins. You know, are we praying through the process? Are we actually providing anything to parents in preparation for something like a math night and leading up to it? So they actually are the ones that are kind of driving a good bit of it, and not just participants and recipients, right? We don't want parents just showing up and sitting in a pew and or in a seat and holding a program and clapping, right? That's kind of treating them as like, you know, actually, we don't need your help. We're running this ship, right? If anything, you want parents leading and guiding things. So whether it's organizing a trip to an opera or a play or an art museum, or to look at, a botanical garden, like parents could and should be the ones that are actually the driving force behind much of this. Or even if you, want to hold a jazz night at your school and you're providing wine and cheese and you're getting a band to come in, the school leader doesn't need to be the one managing and operating all of this. If anything, you engage with the parents and ask them to be drawn in and say, what's your preference? What do you now you need to make sure that, you know, a lot of the details are following suit with the mission and the vision of the school. It can't be in at odds with or in opposition to. But I think if parents are actually drawn into the process and can see that, like, we want what's best for your children, or I know of one school leader that calls the relationship between the school and the parents the conspiracy for the good of we're both aiming to actually provide the best possible means for the children, and we're going to do this together. So let's work really hard to basically say, how do we provide the best possible outcome for students? And I think you also can't discount things like homework in the sense of the school should not just mandate and dictate a formula that's prescribed and then just delivered across the bow to the parents and they're on the receiving end. It's the same problem, right? If they're not actually, engaged with the nature and also the means and the purpose of these kind of things, if they're never told why homework is assigned and in what fashion it is done, then we're just treating them like, academic babysitters of, just tackle this, just execute this, and then return it back to school. They have to be drawn in. They have to be respected. They have to be shown that, like, their role in the culture is vastly important and really, like, you need the parents and the school to be kind of speaking the same language, breathing the same air, both at home and at school. And that's when the child is actually the most acclimated and actually falls in love with what's being offered to them, right? Outside of that, you're sending mixed messages to the child if the two are at opposite ends.
Thank you. Thanks. I want to make sure we talk about beyond, we've discussed the 3-year intensive formation, the sort of examination and renewal, but should a school go through that and adopt the Catholic liberal education model, what sort of ongoing support does ICLE provide after that transition, after the 3 intensive years? Are there opportunities for networking, collaboration? What's the relationship look like at that point?
Sure. Many of the schools that go through the 3-year renewal maintain their member status with our organization, and that allows them to participate in town hall meetings that are offered quarterly. We have something called Shared Wisdom Communities that meets in the evenings on Zoom by grade level assignments. So there's a short presentation, and there's a chance for question and answers to get best practices as a group. Of course, we produce articles on a monthly basis aimed all at teachers, trying to help, again, shape and mold them. We also hold each summer a national conference, and the location changes, but we usually gather about 500 educators in person, and we also live stream the vast majority of the conference as well for those that cannot be there in person. So this is a gathering, beautiful gathering of educators from around the country, K through 12. Lots of different offerings on multiple subject matters, on themes, on integration, drawing you in to really have a retreat-like format. There's daily mass, there's adoration, there's meals that are shared by grade level, lots of discussion and dialogue, and a chance to teachers to kind of spend 4 days together and go back to their school communities refreshed and renewed. And not kind of, dragging the weight of their massive grade book behind them, but seeing the beauty and the mystery in front of them of the children that they're going to be able to serve and be drawn in. Outside of that, there's a lot of nuanced opportunities that schools can choose should they want, just like monthly consulting calls. Can we come back and offer an introductory workshop? Many schools offer that for new staff that's hired after they've gone through the 3-year renewal. We had one school we were working with say, can you come into our school and kind of go through and look at an observation piece of how should I look at observations differently moving forward? What should I be looking for that's different than perhaps maybe what I was focused on in the past? Another school say, I want you to come in and look at the decorum in our school in terms of the physical setup of how the classrooms are organized, the furniture, the reason we put things on the wall or don't. I just kind of like reevaluate if we're drawing students in or if we're distracting them by the way it's currently set up. So there's a host of different options after that. It really depends on what you're looking for.
And for a school or a parish, a community that is excited, interested, wants to do more, what costs should they be thinking about? Are there additional costs associated with the adoption of this model and the maintenance of such an education?
Sure. I mean, yes, there are going to be material costs for sure. Should you choose to enter into a contract with our organization, there's a cost for the 3-year process, and it's spread out over 3 years to make it a little bit more manageable in a school's budget. However, I would say startup costs are really dependent on how fast or how slow, and also how much adoption of content you need to go through. So we take into consideration if you are required to work with state standards, with diocesan standards, all of those pieces are going to dictate the timeline in which you need to maybe reevaluate certain text, or maybe you want to start looking at certain text. But you, the school is going to decide the cadence for what that looks like. Or if you need to, you know, reevaluate maybe the literature pieces or things offered in your library, right? There's not a hard and fast timeline for at the end of these 3 years, you must do X, Y, and Z, and these three, you know, aspects of your curriculum all need to be in full effect. The school's going to be brought into the conversation, and there's a curricular review that is part of the process, and the school gets to decide the cadence and the frequency of how those things look. So startup costs can seem really simple and small. I know several schools that don't have the funding to, when they're looking at new texts, can't set out and just start buying whole student texts. So there's a lot of read aloud. So they might purchase the teacher text, and the teacher's guiding a lot of the instruction because they have the content in front of them, while every student may not have a text sitting on their desk. Fine, the teacher's doing a lot of read aloud and kind of drawing them in that way. As a simple means to kind of keep one eye on the budget and you know, materials costs that go into it.
So we've heard about the opportunities that ICLE provides. If you've got a school, a parish, a community who's interested in examining this model further, what steps should they take to assess their readiness to transition to a classical Catholic liberal education model?
Sure. So the most natural way in which this normally comes about is starting with school leadership at a variety of different levels. This might happen at the superintendent's level or even the bishop's level. It could also happen at the pastor level, pastors with a school, or the principal level. Either one, I think there needs to be a tandem group in the sense of the bishop and the superintendent working together. And also the priest and the principal, the pastor and the principal working together. Some cases we work with private independent schools where you have a headmaster and a board. Same rule applies. I think you need the leadership to be going through a discernment process to see, is our school called to adopt this particular means of education, this particular mode of understanding Catholic education, and aiming for this particular fruit to be borne out in our school. After that process has taken place, and that can take years, it can take months, it can take years. Sometimes it's just born out of a desire. Sometimes it's born out of necessity. I happen to, you know, work at a school that it was a necessity. Our school had tanking enrollment. We had a debt of over $1 million. And it was, we were given 6 months by the diocese to dig out of the hole or close the school. So we were with our backs against the wall, and it was through prayer and a core group of parishioners that brought the idea of adopting the liberal arts to the pastor and the principal, who then turned to the superintendent and said, we'd like to try this as an option, and ended up went forward with that. And the school has doubled enrollment since that day and eliminated all of the debt. And it's been the perfect match for that particular environment. But again, it's prayer and discernment. It's leadership working together to see, is this where we're called? Is this what's necessary and needed? Is this what our community desires? All of those things need to be weighed as you're going through it. I think you also need to consider your stakeholders in terms of, do we have a core group of families that are really looking, are willing to desire this for their own children? You can't just pull this out of thin air, and much like any model, you can't pull out of thin air and just project it on people and expect that they're going to love it, right? You need to start with some stakeholders that are a part of your community and that really see the need and understand it and are really willing to be drawn into this culture and this mode so that it flourishes and grows over time and doesn't kind of, you know, spitter and spatter because someone said, we're just doing this and we're pushing it through. So we help schools through the process with that. We just met in January with 30 pastors from around the country to walk them through what, you know, cultivating the soil in their own school communities could look like, and kind of going through that discernment process of, like, if you feel called to do this, what would be the next steps? How would you, you know, prayerfully consider adopting this in your school communities? And again, there's no starting gun and finish line of it has to be done this particular way, but more trying to shepherd pastors and principals through the process is the best route to go.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that story of your own school's transformation, and as well as some thoughts for our audience as they consider their future of their schools.
Sure.
I should ask, is there anything else that I haven't asked about or things that you think are important for us to know about ICLE and your work?
I guess I would say the last thing is oftentimes there's myths around this notion of classical education or the liberal arts, in that it's elitist or it's only for certain kids from certain demographics, or it doesn't reach to what people might describe as margins or anything like that. On the contrary, I would say it speaks to all students and all families, whether you are of significant means or no means, whether you are an English speaker first or second, and or if you have a learning disability or not. I've seen all students and all families of all those categories been served very well through this type of education. And I think we need to kind of get over our own prejudgments or misconceptions about what something is or isn't, and allow ourselves to be drawn in to the richness of Catholic education by considering this as an option for schools, and not saying, well, I think it's X and it's Y, therefore it's not going to work here, but really have an openness to the Holy Spirit and what they can do in a particular community.
So beautifully said. And that really captures the spirit of what we're trying to do with this innovation series here in the Diocese of Cleveland, too.
Great.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. We've been joined by Danny Flynn, the Director of Diocesan School Relations for ICLE. Thanks for taking such time to give us such a thorough understanding. And thank you for your work and your ministry in Catholic schools throughout the nation.
Thank you, Frank. I really appreciated chatting with you here.
Thank you. God bless.